going on, folks? And thanks again so much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And man, oh man, I have a really, really, really good special guest today. It's just Big Fizzy.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios on a beautiful fall. Well, it's not fall yet, almost fall, but it's starting to feel like fall because it's getting cooler around here. And when I say cooler, it's like 85.
And nobody's mowing.
No one's mowing. Everything's green because of the rain.
But usually Kyle and I get ready to record, and it doesn't matter when it is. Somebody thinks they need to mow.
Oh, I thought I heard it for a second. I was like, there he goes. He's starting it up.
He's waiting for us to go on.
The steel weed eater, right? As we talk. Yeah, it's funny. Every time we get in the studio to record, that's when the guys that are next door decide that they need to have their landscapers come out and mow. Every time without failure. But no, man, I'm doing good. I'm getting ready. It's September. You know, fall is approaching. It's my favorite time of year. I got some new limbs from my bow. So I've been shooting in a new string and... I overdid it, folks. I've been guilty of this many times in my life. And you think you'd learn after a while. You're like, you know, when you're not working out all the time, you're like, you know what? I'm going to get back in the gym and you work out. And then you start putting up some weight and you're like, dude, this is easy. But you overdo it. And then the next day you like can't move your arms. Well, I did it with my bow. I got this new limbs out. I got this new string. I'm like, I'm going to shoot this sucker. And I had so much fun. I shot that bow for 3 hours. The next day I couldn't hardly use my arms.
I forgot what you got. What did you get? Like 55. The 55s. Okay. Yeah.
Not compound, folks. This is recurve. So like, you know, you're holding it, but you know, look, I'm getting older.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I will eventually end up tapering down to where we'll be shooting like 35s and 40s. Like I'm just not.
No, I'll just shoot my compound bow like Remy Martin with his teeth.
There you go. There you go. Good point.
Remy Warren, not Remy Martin. Remy Martin's like a brandy.
Yeah. Wow. That's it right there, folks. You know where he's thinking about. I'm getting his bow, man, and a little cognac.
I've tried that a couple times. Man, it's not for me.
No,
man.
I'm not tough enough.
Right? Not for me. What have you been up to?
Man, oh man, helping my son. He has been, him and all the guys, they've been busy. So I've been actually working with him a lot. Like he's been working dad more. Dad was supposed to be able to kind of cruise a little bit, but that's not happening. So that's pretty much all I've been doing. And I was trying to watch a little college football, but my daughter's alma mater, and I guess kind of like where we've spent some money is A&M. Boy, they looked not so hot. But, hey, congrats to Appalachian State. Good job on you boys. I'm glad
It does make me smile when I see them struggle because I thought my team was going to get obliterated, but they only lost by one to Alabama, that's pretty good, right?
Pretty decent, yeah.
Could have been decent. Much, much worse. I'm getting ready for hockey season, and Luke is all pumped up because of the new Lord of the Rings series on Amazon.
It's great.
I have not watched it yet.
I'll have to talk to Lil Fizzy about it. Him and I can discuss it.
But Luke likes that kind of stuff, right? Anything in the fantasy realm.
Because he knows what's up.
Right. And the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree when it comes to him. In fact, him and Delete are going to watch some horror movie today. I don't remember.
Of course they are.
Because they're out of school.
Of course they are.
Anyways, I don't know. Pretty crazy. I know when it comes to crazy, you always manage to find some of the craziest news stories. So hit me with what you got going on today.
For those of you that are in the know, the month of September usually kicks off, we like to say like the outdoors world, right, as it goes. But in August is usually whenever you start getting into pronghorn antelope hunting season. September, you'll get into more mule deer and elk season. Mm-hmm. And also September 1st here in Texas is dove season and all that. So I've not being only hunting pronghorn a couple of times and not really being a bird hunter per se as far as dove hunting and whatnot. Although I'll go. I just don't make it a point to go. I'm more of an elk hunter. Right. And the whole idea of the elk hunts, this whole thing. So knowing that September fires up, that's when elk season. So
you shoot an elk bow, bro?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mine's only an elk bow.
Yeah. Except that's what I heard.
Yeah. The one that I've got now is only for missing. That's what this bow is for.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I can't, I'd be quarterback. That's why. So when I saw this, it was freaking me out because Lon takes care of me when it comes to hunting and whatnot because he knows how much we love these stories like we've discussed. Listen to this, folks. This is a Bigfoot that stalks some elk hunters. This is from a U.S. Army sergeant that was stationed at Fort Carson, Colorado, decided he wanted to go do a little turkey hunting. This is what it says that went down, though. It says, from 2005 to 2008, I was stationed at Fort Carson, Colorado. While there, my family and I enjoyed spending time hiking and venturing all over. Now, we encountered several beautiful native critters, including mountain lions and bear. During the spring of 2006, I thought I would give it a go and try to turkey hunt near the base. Well, I found a spot in an open unit that had several reports of some good toms in the area. So I got to the parking lot a little after dawn, just enough light to make my way through the brush, of course without the use of my headlamp. I found what seemed like a good spot to set up, so facing part of the Cheyenne mountain range south of Pike's Peak. As the sun rose, I began calling and I had a few turkeys gobbling their response. Unfortunately, where I was, I couldn't tell exactly where they were because of the way the mountain made everything echo. See, there's an old gravel road to my left at about 300 yards, and around 0840, I heard a vehicle coming down the road and glanced over and saw a red pickup with at least two guys in it bouncing down the gravel road driving west through a pass. As they approached the pass, I caught movement out of my right eye. I could see a large, dark-colored thing moving north away from the road. Well, I picked up my binoculars and found it again, and as it began to scramble up one of those draws, I watched it move from my left to right, covering a great distance in almost no time. Just before it began scrambling up the rocky draw, I saw it turn and look back at the truck. Now, in my mind, I first saw it as a bear. However, after a few minutes, I realized that it was on two legs and not four, running across the ground about 300 yards from me. It covered about 500 yards of brush and rocky terrain way quicker than a bear or anyone could have. As it scrambled up the draw, I could see it reach out with its hands and grip and then pull itself up. It seemed like in the blink of an eye, it was up and out of sight behind the trees in the brush. I was trying to wrap my head around what I had just seen. I finally gathered my gear and my gun and began moving back to my truck. It hit me about the time I reached my truck exactly what I had just witnessed. Whoever was in the passenger seat of the other truck, I believe, saw it too, because that's what directed my attention to the movement. They had pointed quickly and the brake lights of the truck had tapped just before I saw movement. As I loaded my gear into the truck, I began shaking with excitement, similar to after shooting a deer and processing what just happened. At the same time, though, I did not want to stick around. Later, I looked up on the web and found that there had been several sightings reported in and around the area. Later, speaking to one of my soldiers from the area, who's from Alamosa, I told him what I'd seen, and he said that they're here. They're all over the place. He said that he and his uncle were elk hunting about 5 years ago. Says my uncle pointed to the opposite ridge and said, "We're not the only ones hunting today." I picked up my rifle and looked through the scope when my uncle smacked me on the head. He said, "Don't do that. You'll just make them mad." He handed me his binoculars and I saw a large hairy man tracking the elk just like we were from the opposite ridge. That's when my uncle told me it was time for us to go and that I needed to be extremely careful when elk hunting in this area. He said, "If you're ever by yourself in here and you come across one of them, tell him that you're just leaving and back away slowly. If he rushes you, because some of them will try to hurt you, don't hesitate. Shoot and don't stop until you see him drop, and then don't ever speak of it." I told my grandpa when we got home, and he confirmed that he had had several sightings out while elk hunting. He had also confirmed to leave, but if attacked, shoot until all of your bullets are gone. So yeah, I know what you saw. Welcome to the family, Sergeant.
Now don't shoot all of them. Always save one turn on yourself.
In case the Bigfoot gets right? you?
That's my motto. Yeah, always save one.
I'm spending them all in the fight.
Man, I wish, where, what section are they in? I want to go hunting and see. Look, they just saw a large hairy man also hunting elk. Maybe it was like, you know, George the Animal Steel. Right. Maybe he likes elk hunting.
It is wild, though.
It is, though. I know what you mean.
Well, here's what I always think about, right? There has to be more stories like this. And knowing the men that I know that have had sightings of something strange that I've talked about on this show for years now, knowing them and knowing how they've reacted.
Right.
I understand that they don't really share a lot of those, right?
I know. Man, I find it fascinating because there are so many sightings.
But you would think that they would see more. I think there's a lot more that hunters see.
That they just don't say nothing.
They just don't say anything.
I agree.
And it's, y'all have to understand this. For those of you that aren't in the hunting world and in this outdoor industry type thing, there's things that I've learned from people that are in there. Here's one of them. Be careful where you take your photographs. because there are people in that area, if they see that you've taken a large game animal in that area, they can go on Google Earth and they will search around till they find the exact matching background or mountain range, or people that have grown up in that area understand those mountain ranges. And then the next thing you know, so there's no real secrets. I can also see that if you've got a good hunting area, just like men that have good, you know, people have these really good fishing spots.
Honey holes.
You don't tell anybody about. If you were like that, had all of that stuff going on, you definitely wouldn't want to tell the story that there might be a Bigfoot, there might be anything. You don't want people in there traipsing around, right, ruining your spot. So it's a double-edged sword. You're right. Like, you know what?
Don't say nothing.
I'm not saying a word.
Last thing you need is 80 people from the BFRO out there messing up your good hunting
spot.
Well,
you're trying to elk hunt, right?
Yeah. You're so like, how was it? You're like, man, I didn't see nothing.
And
like,
here's the other thing. It's not just ruining your elk hunt. You're ruining Bigfoot's elk hunt.
And everything, what I've learned from a lifetime of hunting is hunters are going to brag, right? They're braggers. Mm-hmm. Everything they say, they're overdoing because they like to brag. So anytime you meet somebody like you're saying that, how's it going? How is it? And they say it's terrible. They ain't seen nothing. They're lying.
They're lying.
Just mark it down. Like that guy said, it's terrible. That means that's a pretty good spot.
If there's some scouting areas, exactly. And you ask them, the guy's like, dude, that place is awful. I'll never go back
but
in
see,
there.
It's yeah, also
you
better even, pin it. It's also different even state by state. So like people that hunt mostly in public land, it's completely different. Like you literally are in competition with other people looking for good spots. Where here it's private.
Yeah.
Like you might be on a dynamite place. I can't get on it unless the landowner grants me access.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a different thing by region. You know, and in Colorado, if you're not a citizen, you have to oftentimes put in for a draw.
Well, and the same thing here can be said in Texas is, I wonder, like we've talked about ranchers and whatnot that have seen it and have had these encounters.
I know
there's
one.
Tons of them, right? Well,
and we both know them.
Well, and like we've talked about whenever we had Gary on years and years ago, all the stories that he had that he said he just couldn't share. He had told us a few, but he has a bunch of, you know, encounters where guys don't want it because they're afraid of that exact thing. Of people coming on there, people harassing, finding out. Then the next thing you know is something like that goes down. So I think there may be more sightings like this than we realize.
I agree. Check this out. This comes from a listener that wants to remain anonymous. It says, about 2 months ago in July, I had an experience at my best friend's house. I was falling asleep in the upstairs room, and my friend was sleeping on the other side of the king-size bed. My eyes were closed, and I was not quite asleep yet when the entire field of my vision was filled with an extremely bright light, as though I had suddenly been teleported to a bright sunny day, or someone was shining a high-powered searchlight directly in my face. I still had my eyes closed, but the light was so bright it was showing through my eyelids. Suddenly, it was dark again. But I could see through the tiny slit of my opened eyelids, and I could see the room around me as though it was dimly lit, but not from any source that I could tell in particular. I could see the legs of a figure to my right, right beside the bed. I was still laying on my back, and I began to move off of the foot of the bed as though I was floating a few inches above the bed. I floated across the room, still lying down, and through the window or wall as though it were not there. I could tell there were three presences with me as I floated outside. I hesitate to say people because they weren't. I have never understood the use of the term beings until now because that's the only thing that seems to fit. I'm floating outside and upward, and I can still see through my slitted eyelids the entire landscape of the area around my friend's house, lit dimly as though by moonlight, though I don't think the moon was out. We were at least 4 or 5 stories high in the air. Now, her house is 2 stories, so we were far above the roof. At this point, I do not remember anything but flashes and scenes being inside somewhere. I believe my friend was also there, and these beings, which I never got a good look at, were walking next to us. I don't remember feeling scared or curious. I just felt numb. We were led or walked blindly down a corridor. My friend was to my left, and I remember an image of her, but she seemed asleep, and being to her left. There was another being to my right, as though leading us down this hall, but I never got a good look at them. Either that or I'm too afraid to remember. When I woke up in the morning, this dream was the first thing on my mind. Now, I usually tell my friend immediately if I have a weird or wacky dream, and some can get really wacky, but this time, for whatever reason, I did not. I thought about telling her the next day, and then the next day. I thought about her telling her about it every time I saw her for weeks afterwards. I thought about telling my mom, or some of my coworkers or friends online, but I didn't. I cannot tell you why. I just couldn't. I would think to myself, I should tell so about this dream. It was so weird. But I forgot about it every time. I also began feeling super anxious and afraid whenever night would come. I owned several rifles, and I made sure to have my ammo lockbox nearby in case I heard some sounds outside. I was terrified to take my trash out to the bin at night or get anything out of my car in the driveway. Finally, last week, something broke. I was listening to a podcast. It was an old episode from 2014, and they read an abduction account, and I suddenly wrote a short version of the account to my online friend. My mom, and I also wrote it to my best friend. It was as though someone removed a cork from my mind, and I was able to talk about it. At the same time, I felt horribly nauseous and terrified, like when you tell your best friend a big secret, but you could get in trouble for telling them. When I talked to my mom, she admitted to me that she had a similar experience when she was pregnant with me. She thought it was a dream at the time, just as I thought mine was, but said it didn't feel like a dream, just like mine didn't. She had a dream that she was taken out of her bed and into a building where she could see me as a fetus floating on the other side of a window pane. She could see that I was female and had the thought, she's not done yet. And then her memory ends. When she told me about this, she said that was in the year 1971. But thinking back, the window pane you were floating behind looked like what they depict now in movies of floating flat display screens. I wonder if it was some sort of image of you, not that you were outside of me. I don't know, she might be right. It wasn't until just now writing to you that I wonder if it's all tied to an email I sent. I wrote a bit ago about some of the information I learned about my close family member's job as an electrical engineer who worked a lot at Area 51 and the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. They also did some work for the Air Force in Germany in the 80s. I wrote this letter to another podcast I listened to, but I sent it anonymously from an anonymous email. The more I speak about this, the less fear I have. But at first, anytime I would speak about it, I would be overwhelmed with anxiety, nausea, and illogical fear. I desperately want to say that this was a dream, but I'm terrified to think that it was not. Wow. Crazy, right? This fits. This checks all the boxes.
It does.
For a lot of the typical alien abduction, like it's generational.
That's Al that sent that up. That's from now on, Al's anonymous listener. Thanks, Al.
But she mentions that, you know, like the mother saw the fetus. Mm-hmm. Like we hear about these people, these women talking about how these grays are using, they're trying to, you know, make some hybridization between their species mm-hmm. and ours. I don't know, but terrifying.
Well, don't be afraid because you're not alone.
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
The thing. It's like there's a lot of people that had that happen. So don't be terrified. Don't be. It's not like you're not the only one. So don't let that sit in on you. Everything. You know what I mean? Like,
well, there's plenty of people, no reason to be terrified because there's nothing you can do.
Yeah. But there's plenty of people you could talk to. You just like you're already starting. You're reaching out here. You've reached out to other podcasts. That's great. That's the best way. The best way is to finally start kind of addressing it and talking about it. So it'll kind of help you unwind and understand it. Speaking of understanding. I'm going to cover something that I don't understand so much, at least finding it, but I do love it. When we get back from the break, I'm going to be discussing about a lot of lost and buried treasures scattered throughout the United States, interesting little tales that go along with this, that, or the other. And then when we get back from that, I'm going to pick Big Fizzy's brain about some of this stuff because I think he's going to enjoy
it. Sounds good.
All right, folks, let's jump over to it. After the break, some buried treasure. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
everybody. I want to talk to you a bit about a product that me and Cam use and love. And I think that you're going to like it too. Cam, I know you like to cook. Mm-hmm. I know you like to eat, as do I. And one of my favorite things is learning new recipes. We often share recipes back and forth with each other. And I know a lot of people out there like to cook or wanting to get interested in cooking, but they too only have a limited amount of recipes, right? Your mom gives you an old recipe or your grandma or something, or, you know, you might find it online on Pinterest or some other option like that. You know, my wife does that stuff all the time. But if you want a product that can not only help you learn how to cook new meals, but also to do it with amazing fresh ingredients, then you need to get on board with HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy and fun. And most of all, affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Now, I've talked about it before, but I have to say it again. Me and my wife, we kind of get stuck in a rut with the kids, with school, with sports and things like that. You end up just making the same meals over and over, and it gets kind of dull and it gets boring. So with HelloFresh, you can spice it up. You can learn how to make cool things. They give you these awesome recipe guides, these cards that tell you step by step how to make each meal. And even a guy dumb like me can make it without messing up. So you don't have to be a world famous chef to pull this stuff off. And the ingredients, they really are fresh. I mean, they ship you carrots or potatoes. You still have to get in there and wash them. You still have to peel them. This stuff's not coming in a bag or a can. These are fresh. And we enjoy making it. We save the cards so we can recreate the meals down the road. With fall coming up, you got to enjoy some new fall recipes. Every HelloFresh recipe includes ripe, like I mentioned, just picked produce that travels from the farm to your door in less than a week. Now, fall, I'd have to remind you, is a perfect time to cozy up with some delicious sweets. Get the whole family involved with HelloFresh's limited edition kid-friendly baking kits. We've done it. Luke likes it too. What about you? I know you and your wife like it.
Well, it was one of those things. I didn't realize at HelloFresh that they had more than just dinners when I first started, right? Like, you could just get stuff in. Folks, they have more than just dinners. You can go by there. They got breakfast. They got snacks. And like Kyle said, desserts. And they're good. That's the thing, is it's amazingly good food. And if you want to jump in on that, you need to jump over to HelloFresh.com and use the code Expanded16, all right? HelloFresh.com/Expanded16. You get 16 free meals across 7 boxes and 3 free gifts. Super simple. You want to learn about it? Go to HelloFresh.com/Expanded16. Go in there and use the code Expanded16, folks. 16 free meals across 7 boxes, 3 free gifts. That's HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Y'all, thanks for staying around. We're going to get into a little bit of what I had discussed right before we took the break. There is something about hidden treasure, right? Buried treasure, adventure. It gets all of us going. The idea of being able to go out and dig up something from history that might be lost or intentionally hidden is just, it's something that I don't guess it ever goes away, right? It's one of those things that once that bug finally gets you, and I know people, and I'm sure all of you listening, one of y'all know folks, right, that are like metal detecting enthusiasts, and these folks go out and put in the work and do a lot of research, and I can see how you could easily get addicted to this thing, like where you could, that would be all you would want to do. That would be a hobby that I could easily see it becoming all-consuming. I'll tell you a little bit about how I got into it. It all comes from childhood, right? I'm not a metal detector. I've done a little of it, but with one of those little cheap, like I got one for my grandparents or something one time, you know, and it was one of those ones years ago. It wasn't worth a hoot. Like all you could ever find was like bottle caps or something like that. It wasn't really anything worth, you know, it just made a little noise. That was it. But hey, me and my grandpa got to run around in the backyard and mess around with it. But what kind of got me going, I guess you could say, there was a couple of things. I'll tell you the story first, and then this will lead into that. So the story goes, there's a pirate, all right, that I had learned about. This pirate was from the courts of Spain. And while in Spain, coming up, this pirate was a jester. So that's what he had done. But he took his job a little too serious. And so he started in with like a lot of practical jokes, goofing on everybody, goofing on the king, goofing on the queen, just pretty much being a nuisance, not so much a fun jester, more of a nuisance jester. Well, then got a little full of himself because, hey, look, I can say what I want and I get paid and treated nice. So starts doing a few other things and saying a few other things. Well, the next thing you know, it gets him in trouble, right? So instead of killing this jester, he's banished from the realm. They send him out and said, look, don't come back. You're done. We don't care what happens to you. But if you come around here again, that's it. You're not leaving. It's over. So aggravated by this whole thing and deciding, you know what? I think I'm going to turn over a new leaf. I'm going to take a new path. I'm going to become a pirate. So this pirate gathers men and they get on a ship and he brings them all in on his ideas. Very smart fella. Of course, you got to imagine growing up there in the kingdom like that. So he gets them to help and they mutiny and they steal a ship. And once they steal a ship, well, it's all downhill from there. It's just robbing and racing around, pirating, and they are stealing money from the King of England, Charles I. So this goes on. Millions of dollars are taken. Charles I finally says, that's it. I'm going to send the Royal Navy. Sends the Royal Navy after this pirate, this infamous pirate captain. And story goes that he hid in a cove that had a little cave in the back of it. And when they found the pirate king there, or this pirate there with his men, well, they blasted the mountain, they blasted the caves, they destroyed most of everything around and collapsed the cave system, trapping the pirate and the man, the ships, the men, everything inside this cave system. The pirate's name was William B. Portobello. But most of you, especially those my age, would probably remember him better as One-Eyed Willie. One-Eyed Willie was the captain from The Goonies, right? A fictional story about a really cool pirate captain, right? So that's where it started. 1985, the summer of 1985 was when The Goonies was released. I was 9 years old. I remember that because it was kids. I loved the idea of the kids. I loved the idea of Data with all the neat little inventions. All of these things were all consuming, right? And of course, it grows from there. You know, just the year before is when we had the Temple of Doom. So we've had Indiana Jones coming. There's all of these stories. So I got into the idea of like lost treasures. That stuff is just draws you to it, right? Like all the things we love to read, that was what drew us to it. And if you remember, I've done a few years ago a whole story on Victoria Peak there in New Mexico. And that's another one of those great stories. If you don't know about Victoria Peak, folks, I'll touch on it real quick. Fella found a cave entrance, found a lot of gold, packing it out. You know how this whole thing goes. Something ends up happening. Somebody ends up taking it over. Somebody ends up passing away. All of this stuff, right? There's all of these little twists and turns that you can't make up. That's the really interesting thing. A lot of this, you would think that's easily made up. But it's like the truth is stranger than fiction. So it kind of feels that way, right? This is not so made up. It's almost like the world's working against you is how this feels. But these are the stories that kind of led me into it. And then going and looking, I was always curious too about accidentally finding treasure. The people that what are found that we have big into history, big into our world, even to this day, accidentally.
There's a lot. There's a lot that I didn't even realize were so accidental. Did you realize, and I didn't know, did you know this, that America's Declaration of Independence was actually kind of discovered at a yard sale? Now, I know that sounds crazy, and I don't mean the one. There was an original issue of 200 copies that were printed of the Declaration of Independence. Now, out of all those 200, there's only like a handful that have ever been verified as these are the ones. They've been found. These are the ones. But there was a fella in a thrift store back in 1989, and this fella just saw this nice looking little old picture frame. He was like, you know what? I need a picture frame. This is going to work what I need to do. I'm going to grab this bad boy. $4. You got it. Takes it home, decides, all right, well, I think I'm going to go ahead and use this frame, gets his picture out, gets all this stuff, takes it apart. And behind the canvas in that frame was number 25 of the U.S. Declaration of Independence. Spent $4, bought the number 25, ended up getting paid $2.5 million. That's right, folks, $2.5 million with two L's. For going there and buying a picture frame. Those are the kind of stumbles that I would like to make, right? Imagine the story. It's not just the money, but it's the story. Imagine holding it for the first time, not knowing it was no big deal. But then after you learn the story of you were holding an original copy of the Declaration of Independence. Here's another thing, too. Have you ever heard, and I'm sure you all have, of the Terracotta Army in China? Well, they were found by total accident in the 1970s by some farmers. Right? So, yeah, this whole thing, digging around, they ended up finding, I believe it's like 8,000 of them. 8 or 9,000? I want to say it's like 8,000, 8,500 of them, of these terracotta statues. Right? Unbelievable. Now the whole thing is like a huge museum, and I would love to go see it. That whole thing would be crazy. It doesn't just stop there. It goes on and on. I don't know what criteria we could actually give these, you know, because we always want to compartmentalize, right? And we want to, this is how it has to be. Is there a time limit? This is where it's buried treasure. This is where it's just lost antiquities. No, any of it. Any of it. Because I'm sure some of y'all listening did as I did as you were a kid. I had a stump in my backyard, and on the backside of that stump, I would dig a hole. There was no other reason than to have a mason jar and I had like a little metal pencil box, and I would put my G.I. Joe toys in there, and in like the little mason jar, I'd put like pennies and nickels, but I would bury it. And then I would build a map, right? I would draw my own map, and I would make it real intricate when it didn't need to be, because I didn't give it to anybody, right? It was only for me. It was just me going out and doing all this, and it wouldn't stay buried for more than like a day. I'd bury it overnight, and then, ooh, I'd run out there in the morning, dig it up, or I'd leave it a couple of days. This whole thing, this fascination, and I know that we all deal with it, right? It's the whole idea of what's around the next corner that's going to get you into it, that's going to make you go, I need to know what this is. Speaking of accidental, did you know that one of the biggest buried treasures ever found in the U.S. was found in Saddle Ridge, I believe, California, by a couple named John and Mary, okay? In 2013, they were going for a walk, her and her husband, walking along their property, just hanging out, and they saw what looked like a can, a metal can, like sticking up out of the ground. So Mary's like, oh, I'm going to go get that up out of there. I don't want that out here. So they stroll on over. John's got the dog. They kick on over there, and Mary's like, would you look at that? Gets down there, starts checking around. So John gets down. He's like, here, let me get it dug up. Digs it all up. They get it out inside this pot, if you will, or little containers, little metal tins. I believe there were a little over 1,400 gold coins in there. Now, all these gold coins had been minted between 1847 and 1894. There was $10 million worth. Not worth in there. That's what they're worth now. These people, all that was in there were $20 gold pieces, all right, minted there in San Francisco. They believe that's where they believe that most of them had came from, was that we're going to be minted there. Okay, in San Fran during the gold rush. However, these coins were minted earlier, and they were minted in Georgia. So they have no idea, really. Still, it's still a mystery of who buried them, how they got there. Now, the face value of the coins is like 28 grand. But Like I said, I believe it's a little over $10 million is what they ended up totally selling for of this whole thing since the time. So again, pretty good investment. I'm sure you bought some property, walked around. Oh, there's $10 million worth of mysteriously Georgian printed gold coins that we don't know how to get out here. We have no idea how it made it in here, which is part of the stories. That's the reason we love them. That's the reason we like it. But it doesn't stop there. If you go to digging in, if you like the idea of treasure hunting, now granted too, you can't go and dig up everywhere you want to go, right? National park lands and all this, but it doesn't stop you from just getting out, walking around, and just checking it out, going and looking, seeing what you can find. It is everywhere. And when I say everywhere, I started looking in Texas, and then I started looking in Oklahoma. And then I went to New Mexico, to Louisiana, to Kansas. And as you bounce through every state in as far, I didn't go up, you know, looking in Alaska. I didn't go digging into, is there buried treasure? But I'm sure there's going to be some in Hawaii and down in the islands. I'm sure. But every state that I can find, and it doesn't matter, when you get near the coasts and you get near the river systems, it's riverboat captains, it's pirates, it's explorers. When you get more to the inside, right, it's outlaws. When you get into the Great Plains, you get through Texas, it's outlaws. You go into Oklahoma, outlaws. You go up into Kansas, outlaws. New Mexico, Utah, Arizona, Nevada, California, outlaws, right? Everywhere you go in the West, outlaws. Start heading back to the East, guess what? Outlaws. That's right, folks. Any and everybody that decided they didn't want to conform and was big enough to hold a gun decided they were going to rob stagecoaches, rob banks, rob travelers, or so I guess you could say they're land pirates, right? We're talking about land pirates and all the such that goes into it. One such thing took place just outside of Oklahoma City. Southwest of Oklahoma City's Fort Sill, the Army base, and in 1890, they had a stagecoach would make its way from down here in Texas at Wichita Falls and would haul payroll. And it was 3 days to get there. Now, imagine the 1890s, 3 days, which, to be honest, folks, 1890 wasn't that long ago. Let's not pretend like we're 1,000 years. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, really. We've made a lot of changes, but that was pretty soon. So a 3 day trip, right? So as they go up through there, now they usually have a lot of course, military with them because everybody knows what this is, right? So that's the way this story goes. So the story goes that in June of 1892, they'd been going and doing all this stuff. They decided this one time, you know what? What happens? Complacency. We don't need that many. We're good. We don't need to bring like a half a dozen armed soldiers with us. It's good. We'll just make this us three. We'll just roll up there. Everything. Well, of course, just like the way it would happen, they ended up getting attacked at that point. It's almost like it was, again, serendipitous with what's going on in our universe that you're not going to make it, right? So they go up there. Right as they get to the Red River, they get hit by bandits, runs through them. A few of them get shot. They kill, I think, a couple of the horses ended up getting taken. The whole thing goes down. So makes it, ends up getting there. They get to Fort Sill. They look around. Before he leaves, now the story goes of this whole thing, that a bandit is what it was, that a bandit made his way to Fort Sill, but that he buried all the coins that he had stole, which is kind of funny. So I don't know if he ended up, you know, at a trading post or where he did, but he had found a place to bury it. So he goes on, he goes to Fort Sill, right? So he tells that he was hurt. This is the story. While hunting, that he was hurt. So he finds the doctor there at the fort. They treat him, the whole thing. Well, so the rest of the story goes that while he's there, now this doesn't make sense to me, but while he's there, that they're doing a little reconnaissance of his gear and they realize, oh, wait a minute, you're riding an army pony. That sucker's bred, shod, he's ours. Like, hold up. They put two and two together. They ride out. They find what they find. They realize, oh, my goodness, we've been robbed, this whole thing. So they just throw this guy in the brig. Pretty sure they left him in there for, I don't know, a good bit, about 3 or 4 decades, however long he was put. But so the story goes that he stayed in there for a good while. But Nat goes that he was released. And then when he was released, he goes back to look for the gold. He can't remember where he buried all of his stuff, has no idea what's going on. He's looking all outside the fort because, like I said, story goes, he buried it just right outside the fort. He brought it with him. He was going to stay there and get healed up, and then he left. Well, what ends up happening, the soldiers see him, pay no attention, but they're like, look, you can't stay here. You've been here long enough. We've kept you in the brig. Get out. And that's what they do. They toss him out of there. Goes on. He comes back down to Texas. He's sick. Story goes, he has a friend named Cottrell. Cottrell ends up getting a map drawn for him by this fella and goes and looking, and he goes up. Story goes, he went up and got permission from Fort Sill to start digging in the 30s, but could never find it. That he had looked, completely unsuccessful, never found it. That he had looked and looked and looked and looked for years, getting permission from the fort to come up and dig around. Nothing happened. And it wasn't until the 60s. That Fort Sill itself decided, you know what? We're going to look around out here too. Story goes that they did some digging, and that's kind of where it leaves, that they were just holes and digging and all that. That's kind of where it stops. It's kind of where it goes dead. They never talk about finding the gold. They never talk about not finding the gold. They just leave it at that. Dug a bunch of holes, took a bunch of information down that they did, and left. And that's where it was. So, back in the 1890s, you could steal from the military, hide their gold right outside their house, and they'd never find it. Doesn't stop there. Like I said, you jump over to New Mexico. New Mexico had a lot of prospectors, and there was one just outside of Silver City, New Mexico. And I'm going to butcher this, and y'all are going to love it. Pinos Altos, I believe, was the name of it. So the story goes that a prospector was brought into town, made his way just outside of town. Somebody found him, rushed him into town. In 1836, he had had a couple of gunshots to his chest and his abdomen, and he had an arrow in his back, over into his shoulder. I believe it was his back left shoulder as he had been shot. And of course, you got to imagine that's probably a great time, right, with a bunch of napped flint arrowhead buried up in your shoulder blade. But anyway, the doctor says, bring him in. We're going to try to save him. They're working on him. They realize there's no saving him. They're just trying to get him comfortable, like, oh. So he starts telling this story. He had some friends of his that were prospectors in town that were hurt. He said, go get them. They bring them back. He starts telling this story. He said, hey, look, get in my pack. There's gold nuggets in there. I have been up on Red Hill over there in the distance. And when I got there, there were nuggets all over the top of that mountain laying about. So the story he tells that he was in there and he was loading stuff up in his pack, grabbing nuggets whenever he was attacked by natives in this area. Now, we don't know if that was theirs. I'm sure it was their area, this whole thing, as he goes in. But here they come. They start shooting guns at him. They're lodging arrows at him. He's hiding. He tries to stay as best hidden as he could. But, of course, he ends up, you know, gotten hit during the first initial fray. It wasn't until it started getting dark that he could hear that they were settling down. He took off. Made his way out of there. Took him several hours to get his way back into town. A couple of days later, he passes away, right? So they ended up going into his stuff after he had passed away. They found his sack, and in that knapsack, there was gold nuggets. Not just a couple. There were $7,000 worth of gold nuggets in 1836. Pretty good bit of gold. So, of course, everybody goes crazy, goes looking. From what I can find, nobody's found it. No, and there's several stories that'll tell different ways. That's another great thing about these missing or buried treasures. The stories will all change. And it all changes, of course, by who tells them, right? It bounces around back and forth. And when I say every state, I mean every state. Like I said, you can go through all of it. I found stuff in Rhode Island, the Carolinas, great stories all along the eastern seaboard of pirating and running up into the rivers and cool stuff all down through there. Of course, as we talk about, you know, you get into Oak Island stories, which is another thing as you got older and drags you into. But I want to go back to here. And so there was a story that I remember being told. Now, I don't remember much of this. And it wasn't until I started reading that I remember hearing tales of it. But it wasn't something that I looked up as a kid. I was too busy looking at the flash in front of me to realize that there was something had gone on here in Texas. And not just here in Texas. Of course, there's a bunch of crazy outlaw stuff here in Texas. But the fact that it is believed, possibly, that some of this treasure from this fella right here is 20 miles from where I'm sitting right now. Never knew it. What I'm talking about is a fella named Sam Bass, the outlaw Sam Bass from Indiana, Mitchell, Indiana, to be exact, born in 1851. He didn't fit in too well, didn't follow too well. I believe his parents passed away. He was raised by his grandparents or whatnot, or no, maybe it was his aunt and uncle. But anyhow, either way, he had a lot of siblings. They moved in and had more siblings. They was 10 or 12 of them in a little farmhouse after his parents passed. Sam didn't like it. So Sam, you know, back in the day, that was just what it was. Once you got old enough to make your mind up on it, well, what was to stop you? Nothing. So you just left. And that's what Sam did. Worked his way down south, working his way towards Texas. Stopped off in Mississippi, worked at a sawmill. Made his way down here to work on a ranch right outside of Denton, Texas. That's right, folks, where I was just a couple of weeks ago for the ReaperCon, right? So we're in Denton, Texas with Sam Bass. And he doesn't like the hard work. He got down there working on the ranch, realized like, hey, man, this ain't for me. There's just too much of it, which, hey, it's not for a lot of people. There's a lot of hard work on a ranch. So he's like, you know what? I think I want to try to make money in a little bit easier way. So he got into horse racing, saved up some money, bought him a racehorse, starts racing horses, you know, just wild horse races. Not talking about around the track. We're talking about, you know, one-on-one, heads up, two-on-one, three-on-ones, just everybody racing, right? Just kind of like they do now when they do the street racing. That was their version of street racing. That's an equine version of street racing. But story goes that after he's doing that, he's working with some ranchers down in San Antonio, and they start driving cattle because he's been up and back a few times. So, again, much like the story, the show you see, what is it, in on television there, was it 1886 or whatever? Much like that, they're escorting cattle. So he's working cowboying, going up, and he decides, you know what, I'm going to take them on up into Nebraska. And this is in 1876. And while there, they sell them, they get up there. But what do? They go to where? Deadwood. While in Deadwood, they lose all their money. They gamble it away, him and his buddy Collins. Well, when they lose all their money, well, now they're stuck. What are they going to do? So they start robbing stagecoaches, and that leads to robbing trains. And it jumps. And when I say jumps, I'm talking about, I believe in the late 70s, I believe they stole in the 1870s over $60,000 at one point in Nebraska. Goes on to rob stuff like crazy. Well, as he keeps going, he keeps dipping down here closer and closer and coming back into Texas. Well, everybody up here in the northern part of Texas were like, that's it. So they call in, of course, the Texas Rangers. The Texas Rangers hook up and said, now we're going to go after him. And they did. Took him a year. Only a year. And they caught him in Round Rock down near Austin. And, yeah, as they get down there, they noticed that they're in town. In Round Rock, they're scouting it out. They're looking for a place to rob. So as they're going about all this, the sheriff and the deputy of this area ended up moving in. And A.W. Grimes was the deputy of this area. So they go on in there and they kill Grimes. Grimes approaches him, tells him to drop the guns, knows who it is, tells this whole thing. Getting a gunfight. Grimes is killed. Sam Bass is hit. Shot up pretty good. Story goes that as they made their escape, he was shot and he was hit in the spine, folks. Imagine what that had been like in 1878. And they load him up on a horse. Well, it's slowing him down. And, of course, following the outlaw creed, they drop him. They dump him in the plains outside of Round Rock and take off. And the next day, 3 miles from town, they find Sam, still alive, but he ain't good. And story goes that they get him back to a cabin, they question him, and Sam dies on July 21st, 1878, on his 27th birthday. Funny how that works, right? We always talk about the 27, you hear about all that number, pretty strange. What they never could understand, though, about Sam's fortune was that he didn't live like an extravagant human being. So they believe he must have buried it, spotted all around here. All over the state, all across, they believed that he'd buried stuff in Round Rock. They believed he may have buried things up in the Panhandle. They believed that he'd buried stuff in Kansas, as far up in Nebraska. They believe that he used his system to bury things like a bank, and that he knew where it was. And instead of carrying all of it and taking a chance, he could always get back to it, but that he kept it all to himself. They believe that he buried stuff under trees, along creeks, any place that you can imagine. But what I was telling you about was the place here. I had remembered hearing this story, like I talk about. I remembered hearing the story of something that might have been buried near, I believe it was, there's a little hill or something over here in Mineral Wells, Texas. And so that was the part I was referring to, is there is a part of the Brazos River of where it pulls through. And they believe that he had gotten up in, I guess, on the river maybe, or trying to come down some way with it. And I had hidden in one of these caves in this area up in there. If you also look too, here was something that I'd remember too, and I had to look this up. In the hill country of Texas, there's a place called Longhorn Caverns. And in Longhorn Caverns, it's believed that he hid a bunch of it up in that area also. I don't know that it's ever been found, none of these things here, but they believe that there's a cave system off of, believe, south of Palapino, off the Brazos River, and that you can find it down in there, and that that was one of the hidings for the outlaw Sam Bass to hide his stuff. Now, I don't know of anybody that's ever gone looking. I should. We've got the kayaks. We've talked about it. It would be fun to go do, right? And this is the story that I would talk to a friend of mine about whenever he was the one that had told me his father had always heard stories about Sam Bass and Sam Bass's fortune being hidden up in this area in those mountainous little caverns along the river. But I want to go back real quick. As I was telling you about One-Eyed Willie to open this whole thing up with. So Astoria, which is where this is from there, where One-Eyed Willie actually popped out at, right? Along the coast, which if you look, I mean, goodness, how pretty does that look? That whole coast looks completely beautiful. I've never been there. I'd like to go check out Oregon, but either way. So this is where we're talking. Astoria. And in Astoria, they're in Clastrop County. Okay? Well, if you go to looking in Clastrop County, it's covered up with possible lost treasures. Coxcomb Hill, called Astoria Column. And there's a river, okay, that down through there. It's a 125-foot monument there that commemorates westward expansion. Now, it was built in 1925. And a story goes that there, in this area, along Coxcomb Hill Road, there was an old fellow that lived. And that story says that he had hidden over $10,000 on his property up there in the 20s. And still to this day, nobody's ever found it. If you jump forward to Josephine County, right outside there, still in Oregon, Josephine County in 1878, was a German prospector, allegedly was hiding under a rock ledge. This is how a lot of this stuff starts. We're going to hide in somewhere out of the rain. Says he saw a badger go in a hole. He was like, well, I'll be doggone. Moved in towards this badger, dug it a little bit open, looked down in there, and says that he found a vein of gold. And he reached in and got as much as he could, at least from that area, without having to bring in a bunch of tools and dig, brought some back out with him. Well, he believes that it would have been worth over $500,000 from what he could see looking down into this whole thing. And again, the story goes that he went back multiple times, could never find the cave, could never find the hole. And of course, he later passes away. These stories are a dime a dozen, folks. Anywhere you go, anywhere you look, anywhere you check it all out is nothing but buried treasure and interesting stories all the way around us. And much like I've urged you to do in the past, when you start looking into it with cryptozoology or the paranormal, you find out that there's a whole lot of it right around you, right? Circling you without ever knowing it. And it's the same thing with these treasures. We always act like we're bored. People these days always seek the next greatest thing. They're looking on a screen, right? We're looking down at a screen. We're letting this energy in on us all the time. When in reality, the greatest adventures are just right outside our door. All you have to do is walk outside. You never know what you're going to see. You never know who you're going to meet, the things you're going to come in contact with, the things you're going to learn, the sounds, the sights, the smells. Sometimes you need to close off. You need to get away from this technology. Don't feed that electronic demon, get outside, enjoy yourself, and maybe make a little adventure on your own. I hope you enjoyed this. I have a handful of others that I'm fixing to record for an Elite show will drop next week. I hope you enjoyed a little bit of the craziness of buried treasure. I'll leave you with this. In 1820, there was a farmer on a little island, a little Aegean island, and strolled out into his field. He was looking for some white stone. He was going to build a wall around his house, just a small wall, but he needed some white rock for this. Well, he noticed something in these nearby ruins. So he goes to his friend, who's a French naval officer, and he's like, "Hey, I need to help move this. I think I found something." So they get over there, right? And he's like, "Man, all right, hold on." They start trying to move these pieces. He's like, "Let me call my buddy. We need some more help. Get some few more hands in here." And as they uncover more and more of this stone, of what they've noticed in there, they uncover the Venus de Milo, folks. That's right, Venus. The statue with no arms. They never found the arms. They don't know what was holding. But, of course, it's now in the Louvre, is where its home is now. But imagine laying eyes upon that on the first time. Covered in stone, crushed and dropped. The work it went in to carve that, only to see it all these years later and uncover it, bring it back and reveal it to the world. And just like that, he'd have never known it was there without getting out, walking around, and looking at the world around him. So, folks, I'm going to leave you with that. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll pick Big Fizzy's brain about some hidden treasure. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. We have told you, and we're going to continue to tell you something that makes our lives wonderful, and we want to get you involved in it, and that's microdosing, folks. Like we say, you don't understand what microdosing is? You need to go to microdose.com. You can check it all out. You can learn everything about it. It's microdosing THC. Now, don't let those three letters scare you, all right? It's not the IRS. It's the THC. This is the things that's good for you and me. Look at me spitting wicked rhymes. Here's what I'm telling y'all. Little bitty minute particles of it makes you feel amazing. I like to take them before the show. Me and Kyle like to have one, especially when we're disc golfing. We use it because not only does it take the edge off, like I've said before, It makes it to where I don't think I get as sore. I don't know if that's just me, but I feel like when I'm relaxed, everything's moving so much better. I can flow from one thing into another. It's not like I'm fighting the current. I'm going with the flow. All of that is due to Lumi Labs and microdosing a little THC. Now, Kyle,
yes.
I always leave this up to him because he's a detail guy. Kyle, hit him with the terpenes.
Yeah, the microdose gummies, like Cam says, deliver the perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just right. Mm-hmm. Right now, they start out with organic U.S.-grown hemp from small family farmers who produce a wide range of the active hemp compounds known as cannabinoids and terpenes.
Word!
THC, CBN, CBD, and CBG are popular examples of these cannabinoids and terpenes. These are like the essential oils of hemp. Now, each strain-specific variety contains a unique combination of these things that make you feel just right. Now, listen, I take it daily because I've got things called pesky teenagers living in my house. I got two 15-year-olds that know everything. So I'm constantly high strung right at the house. Take me a little microdose gummies and I feel much calmer. They got different strains. They got different varieties. It doesn't matter if you want hybrid, if you want sativa, if you want an indica, and they taste great too. They got amazing flavors over there like wild berry, watermelon sorbet, orange cream cookies, and of course, cotton candy kush. And if gummies aren't your thing, they also got these tinctures. You can put a couple drops under your tongue, does the same thing. Microdose is available nationwide. wide. Like Cam said, to learn more about microdosing THC, just do a quick search online or go to microdose.com and use the promo code EXPANDED. That's EXPANDED to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Now, I'll put links to it in the show notes, but that's microdose.com and use the code EXPANDED.
Here we go again. Fizzy, what do you think? I was
intrigued, and I love stories of this because it's just like, you know, ever since I was a little boy and I watched Indiana Jones,
yep,
I've been obsessed with treasure hunting and things like that. Now, when I say obsessed, I don't actually do any treasure hunting. I've never been treasure hunting.
No.
But I like the stories around it. I like the idea of it, the romantic,
the fantasizing of it. Yeah, that's really cool.
And I had no idea. I was also as a child a big fan of the movie The Goonies. I had no idea that it was in fact based on a real person.
Well, I don't know if it was a real person, but the way they wrote the story
allows
it. So yeah, that might have, they've gathered all that stuff. But yeah, there is a lot. Oregon surprised me with the number of like buried treasure up there, but also too Nebraska,
right?
Kansas. I mean, y'all, I'm telling you, you start looking into it, there are stories everywhere.
Man, everywhere. I was just watching a video like a couple days ago up in Alberta somewhere near Calgary. Mm-hmm. And they had a farmer on there. And there was like a piece about like farming and agriculture. This guy had like 5,000 acres up there, and he's like a fifth generation person up there. And they were showing, and then they were just following him around. He's in like a side by side, riding some fences, showing him. And then he's like, "Oh yeah, this guy's like in his 80s. He's like, "Come over here, take a look at these rocks." The guy that's interviewing him is looking at these rocks. They're like, "What is?" He's like, "Oh, these are old Viking stones." Like, what? With like a, yeah.
And they've just
like,
been there, and he just,
how many of those things are out there? Right, all over. Just like the treasures, like why would they be there? But I mean, why not?
And I've also watched a lot of metal detecting videos and stuff where they're in the UK, when they're going to like all the, in Europe, where they go all mm-hmm. through the sites of the war and right, find a yeah. bunch of stuff there. You watch the dudes like in Australia digging it. Like I've watched them like opal mining, right? Like, and I just, some of that stuff, it's just fascinating to me. It's just a different walk of life. But treasure hunting, the idea of treasure hunting is just sounds like fun, right? It sounds like a good time.
You know, there's a spot, I think it's in France, but I'm not 100% sure, that even today, like a couple hundred acres, you can't walk in because there's so much like leftover ordnance there that like there's still active mines.
Yeah, no thanks.
Right? Yeah. It's crazy to think.
Wasn't there a lot of that like in Vietnam too? I think so. It's like that around the world. I think there's a lot of those battlefields where people still lose their life, children lose limbs and whatnot playing out there that come across those old explosions or those old mines and whatnot. It's terrible. Because, I mean, how would you get it out?
Well, and they're buried all over. Nobody's writing down detailed maps of where they're buried.
I'm going to tell you this. That's probably what would happen to me. I would start metal detecting like that, and I would go and get consumed.
You
got to
call like 411 before you dig, or what next is it? What's the one you got to call?
That's it. Boom! And then I'm gone.
Right?
Just gone. Are you ready? So we've got some plans this weekend. I know what some of your plans are this weekend. They're going to involve sitting it with me watching some of the ADCC.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fan of the ADCC. I'm a big fan of grappling. There's a lot of good matches going on. So I definitely will be getting my popcorn. I'll be getting my Dr. Pepper, and I'll be checking it out.
I'm going to be armchair quarterback and going, I would never do that, as the best in the world are doing it. And my dumb self is watching. I love it.
Especially the super fight.
So for the people that don't know, it's ADCC, the Abu Dhabi Combat Club. It's all submission grappling and all that. So it'll be on. And so Kyle and I are super excited about that this whole time.
It's no gi. Yeah. Jiu-jitsu is basically what it is.
And I've been watching a little Lord of the Rings, like we said. That stuff's awesome. So I'm waiting for more of that. I've got Kyle. He's on hold, so I can't tell him about it. Like I said, I got to talk to Little Fizzy about it. I keep wanting to discuss it with him, and I'll send him something. Then I'm like, man, I can't. I got to back that off. So I'll wait to have you caught it. But you've been watching Game of Thrones. Did you put that on hold, too?
I watched the first episode.
And you're going to wait till they're all done, aren't you?
I'm going to wait a little bit.
Son of a gun.
I like to binge.
All right. Well, we'll wait. I'm not even going to bring anything up. We're just going to move on with that, then.
Yeah, before we get out of here, check this out. We got another cool story from a listener. Yeah. It says, hello there. My name is Dave, and I have a story of a portal I believe I witnessed in the skies of South Philly in the summer of 2017.
Where I was born and raised.
I worked on tugboats and barges for almost 10 years by 2017 and have sailed from Virginia to Connecticut. I've been in the rivers and offshore and have never seen anything strange or even unusual other than the people you meet, which are just as strange as this story sometimes. On this particular night in 2017, I was on the phone with my girlfriend at the time, just walking up and down the deck of this 350-foot black oil barge that I was working on. Now, it's important to note that these barges have 8 to 10 floodlights that can illuminate the deck to a daytime glow. Seeing as we work 24 hours a day, we need good lights. So I was walking down this very well-lit deck when in the sky over the bow, which was facing the city, a bright flame. Now, when I say bright, I mean really bright. This ball ignites in the sky and then proceeds to draw a circle, a perfect circle. But when the ends meet, it burns out just as fast as it happens. That was about 10 to 15 seconds. Now, it's important to note the movie Doctor Strange came out just the year before, and I at the time had not seen it. But when I did, I was left utterly speechless because the portals that Doctor Strange opens with the sparking flames looks exactly like what I saw, except on a smaller scale. I have no clue as to what I saw, and the guy I worked with at the time came out just in time to see the end of the event. Any idea what I saw, or if anyone else has seen this kind of event? Thank you for your time and for reading my story. Much love from a huge fan, Dave. Dave, that's cool. I like the description of like Doctor Strange when he opened those portals. Yeah. But what could he have seen in the sky? Just do that. Like literally a portal opened and then maybe something invisible, translucent flew through it. Not just necessarily an aircraft or a spacecraft, but maybe like one of these manta rays or one of these flying sacks you talk about.
Wasn't there a portal in Sweden? Remember that popped up? They were showing pictures of it or whatnot. The people were saying they believed it was part of HARP.
Yes, I remember that when that came out. That was your 100% good memory, man. I'm glad you thought of that. I know exactly what you're talking about. It was like in Norway or Sweden.
Yeah, I think Norway. It's known as the Norwegian Spiral. That's it. Yeah.
I think it was later determined. You're right, though. That's what everybody was claiming for about a year. And then I think a year or so later, it came out that what that was a satellite, like a rocket.
Yeah.
The rocket that delivers the satellite had some kind of crazy malfunction and it was spinning out of control and it was making all you were seeing were.
Because it looked crazy.
The exhaust. Yeah. It looked like
that's one of those ones like even I would panic if I was outside and saw that, right? You'd be like, what is going on in my world?
Or it really was a portal and that the story about the rocket was made up. But yeah, just search.
So that was modern day swamp gas is what that story was.
Get on Google or get on YouTube and search up the Norwegian Spiral or portal or something like that, and you'll see it. And it is pretty cool looking.
I will say this. I got lucky remembering all that because, folks, this week, a couple of days ago, is Kyle and I's 9th anniversary doing this podcast.
Man, when you text me.
9 years. Congratulations, friend.
Congratulations. When you text me the day, I was like, what? I completely forgot. But in actuality, we've been doing it a decade because we had started working on the podcast like a full year before we ever released anything.
Yeah.
So it's basically been a decade.
Yeah, just dropping audio for 9 years.
Time goes by fast.
It's weird.
I can't believe we're still sitting here doing it.
No, I can't.
I mean, I'm glad to be doing it. But yeah,
I love it as much today as I did when we started. I think I love it more now.
I do love it more because now we have a community. When you first started, you're out there all on your own, boy.
Yeah.
Now
with all of y'all listening, it's fun. Like, and speaking of listening, before we go any further, make sure y'all come to the live show, man. We've got all kinds of messages and everything. We want to see y'all out there. Come hang out with us. It's one night. It's a good weekend before Halloween. Right there at 28th there in Fort Worth at Panther Island Brewing.
Also, I'm sending out a personal message to everyone out there listening. If you have any crazy or wild hunting stories, please email the show. The reason I ask for those in particular is because me and Cam are going to be appearing on the Ducks Unlimited podcast for a special Halloween show. And we're going to try to be collecting some of those strange hunting stories to tell on that show.
Yeah. So we've got several, but bring them on. If y'all have had anything weird happen to you when you're hunting,
And even if you have a story that has nothing to do with hunting, send that in to expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Or if you'd just like to tell it and hear it played in your voice, call the show 888-393-2783.
Yeah.
That's 888-393-BRUD. Cam, other than the ADCC.
Yeah.
And other than you being sad and down because Texas A&M seems to have a terrible football team this year.
Yeah, they're good, aren't they? Go ahead.
Other than you using the crock pot to cook 35 moose brats when I walked in today, what else do you have planned?
Man, oh man, got to get to the lease, got to do a little work at the lease. Like I said, getting prepped up for 2 weeks because we got deer season firing up. I'm going back on my hunt again to do more video work in Colorado and Kansas in November. So we're prepping a bunch of stuff to get ready for that. And next weekend, too, I believe the next Friday, a week from today, in Dallas. If you want to check it out, you can watch it on Fight Pass. You're going to get to see Fury, the MMA. I think it's called Fury FC or Fury. What is it? Man, I'd be lying to you. I'll have to find the whole thing to give you the right dates. But you can watch it on Fight Pass. It's going to be next week. Our buddy, Isaiah Gutierrez, a little teep, is going to be putting the stamp work in there on somebody. He's out at Jackson's Winklejohn right now. He's been out there training with them some, too. And then he'll be back for his MMA fight there. So
that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I'm excited to watch Gordon Ryan this weekend. No lie.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pumped. It's going to be great. There's going to be some really good matches. I'm really excited. Sad thing is we got our D&D postponed. We have to pick it up again next week, but that's all right. We'll gather that stuff up. Things happen. Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty much the long and the short of it for me and mine. What about you, Knucklehead? What you got going on besides watching the ADCC?
Other than that, I think.
And you're going to have to eat some of these moose dogs.
You got something planned with Luke. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head because they've got a 4-day weekend.
Yeah.
Just like a school in service day, nothing special. But I don't know. Something's going on Monday. It might be like go-kart racing or something.
All right.
I forgot what it was. But anyways, before we get out of here, let's not forget about our sponsors, Microdose Gummies. To learn more about microdosing THC, just do a quick search online or go to microdose.com and use the promo code Expanded, that's EXPANDED, to get free shipping and 30% off your first order.
And if you want to check out America's number one meal kit, you need to go to HelloFresh.com/expanded16. Put the little code expanded16 for 16 free meals across 7 boxes and 3 free gifts.
All right, folks, that's about all the time we have for this episode. Be safe out there. Give someone a hug and a compliment. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.